You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, where you can download some of these shows. You can also find us on iTunes, where we're podcasting. So if you want to hear the shows on your iPod, we wholeheartedly suggest it.
You don't like the way I introduced podcasting, so you didn't even let me say it anymore.
You don't get it right. You're like, iPod, pasting, mine.
There's this little thing, it's called an iPod, and some people have them, just not me.
And somehow, they fit music in there. Anyway, so...
So, Francis, you know, we're always, always talking about the finer things in life.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's such a, it's one of our taglines.
Yeah.
Taglines? No.
I love those with the Girl Scouts. Yeah.
It's one of our taglines.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that upsets me is there's an association to the finer things in life and snobbery.
Mm.
And I love the finer things in life,
mm-hmm.
but I can't stand snobbery.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I just want to punch snobs right in the nose.
All I have to say to that is,
thank you for that.
You know, I think it's very funny because, you know, there's a certain amount of, look, people get jazzed about food and wine, or they get jazzed about some hobby they have, and they want to talk about it, and I want to talk about it with people like that. I'm fascinated,
right.
Even if I'm not into whatever it is that you are into. Right. I want to hear about it from someone who is. I think that's great.
I love to talk about people who are excited about one
talk
thing or another.
Talk with people, you mean. Not talk about people.
Well, sometimes I like to talk about them. Depends on what they're excited
Mother always
about.
Said, if you don't have something nice to say. But there is a line that gets crossed, and I think wine guys tend to do it sometimes, and mm-hmm. it's to talk... Not so much to share your enthusiasm with something and sort of take stock of whether the person you're talking to is interested in what you have to say or not,
mm-hmm.
And see what they know about it and what they don't, and whether or not you look down your nose at that person if they know or don't know or have
right.
a different opinion.
I know more than you, so I'm better than you.
Yeah, and that's sort of endemic in a lot of wine people.
There's a lot of people in our business with that problem, and a lot of people like that I want to just punch in the nose.
Well, and the thing is, that's I don't know how to explain to somebody what the difference is between. I love to chat about wine with people who mm-hmm. I get paid for it on the radio, you know. But I love talking about wine, like what people had and what did you have to think about this and what do you think about that. But it's about taking stock of who you're talking to, and it's you know what it is. Here's the deal. I think wine is a good example of a lot of the finer things in life. But the highest use to which I feel wine can be put is to bring people together, is to share a bottle of wine, or to maybe talk about a similar bottle of wine that you had, and wasn't that great? Yeah, it was. When we go out to a restaurant, we each get our own plate of food. We each get our own dessert. We each get our own cocktail. The one thing that's shared is a bottle of wine.
Well, and also the big bottle of water, we share that too.
Well, yeah, but that's not really remarkable. but the thing that the big thing that's shared is a bottle of wine, and so wine functions on so many ways. It's to be a common experience.
Well, we choose it together. You know, we talk about what type of wine that we're going to have for the night.
And wine has played that role in look at the Christian tradition, look at the Catholic tradition.
We all shared it.
I mean the Mass itself. I mean, you know, and. Wine is very central and very communal, and wine can be used to bring people together, as I think sharing nice experiences can be as well. But I think the worst use to which wine can be put is some people try to use it to set themselves apart.
So many people do that, and that's one of the things that Francis and I say at Stage Left all the time is wine should be used to bring people together, and so many people in our industry are using it to try and separate themselves from everybody else.
Well, and usually it's not the people in the industry. It's you know, if you're in this for a bit...
Oh, there's a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I was just thinking that through. Anyway.
But there are also a lot of people who are really into it and want to share it and make it communal and make it something that we can all enjoy together.
On a similar note, are you aware of this new guidebook that's come out by Raquel Brulé and Eric Lavandera, who put out a book called Le Carnet?
Yes, you know that I've nicknamed Raquel Brulé Creme.
Like creme brulee?
Yes, and I've nicknamed Eric de Lavandera... Lavender Man.
Because they sound like two of the most obnoxious people I've ever encountered.
Yes, and that's why I have nicknames Creme and Lavender Man.
They're two fabulously
wealthy.
Fabulously wealthy. Thank you. My partner was there for me.
I'm here for you.
They're two fabulously wealthy, spoiled little brat jerks.
Spoiled little brat jerks, I think it definitely defines them. At least according to the New York Times article and some of the other things we've read about.
Well,
them.
No. The New York Times did not call them spoiled little brat jerks. The New York Times just showed them for what they are.
Showed them as spoiled little brat jerks, and we interpreted that.
And what these people do is
their actions and words.
They're two fabulously wealthy people, a fabulously wealthy couple.
Which in and of itself, I have no problem with.
Got no problem with that. Aspire to be that.
I love fabulously wealthy people.
I aspire to be that myself. What they do is they go around and they have this online book that's also published in a guide that you can, you know, they send you a guide printed out. And it's a personalized travel service making recommendations only about the top of the top most expensive things in any given city. And I think it's 50 cities around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have a problem with that overall. Just because they're rating, you know, the most expensive things, there's utility for that. Not everybody can go to those things, but it's how they do it. And you know what it is? Even whether it's very expensive or not very expensive or inexpensive, when I go somewhere, whether it's a hotel or an inn or a restaurant or a diner or a hot dog stand, there's a way to be gracious.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're ungracious, it's not about only the technical aspects of service, even in the highest places. Now, listen, when you're spending a lot of money, you need to have the technical aspects of
service
done right.
It's also about expectations, though, Francis. I have different expectations at a hot dog stand than I do at a great restaurant. And I don't have to be a snob to enjoy. I'm sorry, if I am a snob, I can't enjoy a great hot dog.
Yeah.
While I can be somebody who loves the finer things in life and enjoy a great hot dog.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I want to give you some examples of some of the things that they say about these guys. Now, what these guys do is they go from city to city, and why this was, they live in New York, or they have a house in New York. They have houses in many places. As I said, they're quite wealthy. And what they did when they in New York is they were rating hotels and restaurants in New York. And you know, here's just an example of what I think is the wrong-headedness of how this review is done and how people who look at the world like this are. Now, these are two wealthy, powerful people. I don't know if they're powerful, but, you know, they're as powerful as, you know,
a million dollars. There are people reading their reviews about one place or another.
During breakfast last week at the Hotel Plaza Athenae, Mr. De La Vendera, however the heck you pronounce his name.
Lavender Man.
Lavender Man had a fit when his $20 bagel arrived with cream cheese and smoked salmon splayed on the side. Here's a quote from Lavender Man. "Can you please put my bagel together?" he nearly barked to the waiter. "If I have to work, you should pay me for service." Okay, here's my review of Lavender Man. What a clod. Okay? Does that make him feel important that he needs to bark at a waiter?
Yeah, he
should lecture a waiter? Look, first of all, I like my salmon on the side, and I don't want it together.
Me too.
And secondly, you know what? I can see, you know, in my review, I see that as a flaw of service, and I'll note that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that extremely important? I don't think it is. But even if you do as a reviewer, that's fine. But it speaks ill of him, and it speaks to me of the wrongheadedness of this whole thing. You need to bark at a waiter,
right,
and you need to, like, give that quippy little lecture. You have so much. I mean, how little does that make?
I also think that a reviewer, if you're a true reviewer, you don't really want to get involved with
right.
the server. You should be laying low and watching what happens in that atmosphere, whatever
right.
whatever you're reviewing, be it a hotel, a restaurant, or a hot dog stand.
Well,
you should be observing, and that should be the primary role.
And we
play.
Have so many wonderful, gracious people who come into our restaurant. And, you know, the thing about being gracious is you treat people with respect. And my father taught me a long time ago that, you know, it's how people treat the waiter or the cab driver. We'll be back in just a moment.
I want to talk some more about Lavender Man and creme brulee.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:50. We're back with The Restaurant Guys, and we're talking about Lavender Man and Creme Brulee, the new miniseries. We're not really talking
about... You better tell them what you're actually talking about.
We're talking about this new snooty guide called Le Carnet, which you can get online. It's $50 per city per year to subscribe, and what they do is they will personalize a city guide for you. So you email them, like, what kind of... They ask you a bunch of questions, like, do you like to go to dinners more or museums more, what kind of thing? And then they give you an interactive map of the city with all the places that they've selected, and they also send you a little thing in the mail. The carnet is a French word that means it's like the little black book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
And the way they send this, oh my God, it's so pretentious, I want to scream, is they send you to carry in your pocket like a little carnet, what someone would call a carnet, a little travel journal, a little black book, and it's written as if it's the travel journal of this fictitious person who talks about all the fabulous places that she went to.
Yeah.
With addresses so that you can go to.
Their names are Raquel Brulé and Eric de Lavandria, and we have nicknamed them Creme Brulé and Lavender Man.
And they're really snooty, snooty, snobby, ungracious people. And my review of them is, ew. No. And I want to read from you when Ms. Brulé exclaims, ew, as she collapses on the bed at the Rivington, having exhausted herself, trying on too many Carlo Miel party dresses. The mattress is made of foam. Mr. Lavenderman, her Swiss companion, was busy rooting around in the closets when another cri de coeur was heard. The robes, they're not even terry cloth. Now, look, I don't have a problem with that so much as they're alone in the room. But what I talked to you about earlier is, you know, this guy gets a bagel that's done slightly not the way he wants, and he barks at the waiter with some, you know, you should pay me for service. How small a person are you that you're a wealthy, you know, international traveler with a beautiful wife, and you sit and you supposedly know a lot about dining and food, but evidently you don't know enough to be gracious? Hold on a second. I talked about him being ungracious. Ms. Brulé, or Creme Brulé, we're calling her, kicked up a small tempest of her own just at Just Calm Down, a day spa on West 22nd Street, when the owner refused to serve martinis with the pedicure session. Ms. Brulé insisted they'd been promised martinis on a previous visit. The place doesn't have a liquor license.
Right.
The owner insisted otherwise. In quotes, she says, I'm in shock. Have you watched the news recently? And she's in shock she can't get a martini with her pedicure against the law. Ms. Brulé, or Creme Brulé, said to Lavender Man as they left in a huff, having been forced to pay the $185. To quote Miss Piggy, having been forced to pay the $185 for the time they booked in advance. So they wanted their money back as well.
We wouldn't give you a martini. I just let me give you another example of the haughtiness of this. And again, Frances and I love the finer things in life. We would love something that we felt was fairly reviewing the finer things in life.
And frankly, I'd love a pedicure with a martini.
But the finer things is not snobbery.
Snobbery
and the finer things are not one and the same.
I just put an image in Mark's head that made him grimace of me with my bare foot getting work done, martini in hand.
But again, here's another quote from the same New York Times article. The week's biggest quandary was whether to exclude entire swaths of Manhattan. The upper West Side was easy, except for the museum. The museums, there's nothing there.
Except for a million people.
and some great restaurants.
And some great restaurants.
And some really interesting...
West is up there.
There's some great places up there.
And my favorite, and here's where we go, where it's just gone too far. You've gone to, like, total decadence, and where people are nasty. And
again, I don't even mind decadence. Right. That's not the issue. The issue here isn't, are you decadent? Do you like the finer things in life? Do you like things that are extraordinary and extravagant? That's not the issue. You can do it without being a snotball.
And the thing about it is, I don't think it's fine at all, and I don't enjoy my day at all if I put down people or bark at anybody, and I'm not going to lower myself by barking at a waiter, even when he doesn't give good service. I'm going to say, maybe I won't come back here.
Right.
But you know what?
Or maybe I'll give them a bad review in my little black book. I don't have any issue with that.
My favorite thing about these people, in the end of the article in the Times, they said Creme Brulé was willing to give the neighborhood a chance. She's talking about the meatpacking district, which is a little too cool for school right now. But they turned onto Washington Street, which oddly is the street where the purveyor that Mark and I buy our meat from is. And they were instantly overcome. They're talking about whether or not they're going to include the meatpacking district as a place in the Cockney. They turned onto Washington Street in the meatpacking district, which has a meatpacker on it. and they were instantly overcome by a foul odor. Creme Brulé turned to her companion's face. Her companion's face was wearing a distinct expression of displeasure. Is that rotting meat? This is definitely not Cockney.
Because if you're Lavender Man, everything should smell like lavender.
You're in the meatpacking district, and it smells like meat, and you're upset. You know what that makes you? An idiot. An idiot is what that makes you.
Frances and I don't really think a lot of this particular guy.
Man.
Can anybody tell?
So if you would like the snootiest guide about how to go be a jerk, you can listen. You can go to carnetravels.com. That's www.carnetravels.com. And you might even send him an email saying, we think you're idiots.
We're not putting them up on a website.
Oh,
no way.
Man.
Sorry. People might stumble over it and think we recommend it.
Unbelievable.
By mistake.
You know, this guy Lavender Man, He's fabulously wealthy. He has he was raised in Guatemala, France, and Switzerland, married to Catherine Hennessy, and who was an heir to the cognac fortune. That's Hennessy cognac fortune. And then he was married to Marie Laforette. He's been a high-powered Parisian stockbroker and a travel consultant to the United Nations and a few Saudi princes, which begs the question, don't you have anything better to do?
So you can tune in next week for the tales of creme brulee
and Lavender Man. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys being a little ridiculous. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. Back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick. Forgot the name of my own restaurant there for a moment. And we are here talking about a number of different things. One of the things that we want to talk about that's a little interesting is we want to talk about caviar. And whether you like or don't like caviar, what's going on in the world of caviar is very interesting. Some of the traditional places that produce caviar are in a lot of trouble, and some new places in the world are really producing some excellent caviar, and one of those places is right here in the United States. One of the top caviar producers in our, what we believe is the best caviar producer in the United States, is a company called Tsar Nicolai, and we have with us from Tsar Nicolai, we have Deborah Keene.
Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Thanks for coming on the show. Now, you guys went from 0 to 60 in, like, no time at all.
You guys are getting an awful lot of press out there, Deborah.
Thank you.
How is the caviar business in general?
Very good. We've been very fortunate, and as Mark has indicated, we've had a lot of coverage, a little combination of both our timing and what's happening with the industry and the fact that all our investment over the years has finally paid off into a great harvest.
How long have you guys been out there, Deborah?
Tsar Nicolai, the founders, have been the pioneers of domestic farming for 25 years. The company's been around for over seven as Tsar Nicolai. Prior to that, it was California Sunshine Fine Foods.
And now, are you finding that the resistance, because for a long time people say, if it's not Iranian or Russian, I don't want it. Are you finding that people are now embracing American-produced caviar and fish eggs that they in a way that they weren't before?
More so than ever before. In fact, it has switched to the point where they actually ask for domestic farmed product that are that's sustainable.
Uh-huh. And do you think that's because of the ecology of it or because of the taste of it?
Primarily because of the taste. I think before everybody knew about it, but we just weren't where everyone, especially the white tablecloths like yourself, restaurants, top restaurants, were, you know, hoping to have a quality product. And we finally have gotten there. And now they know that both for the availability and consistency of the product, they're starting to ask for this.
Yeah, well, one of the problems that we've had in restaurants recently, certainly over the last couple of years, is what we call counterfeit caviar. And actually, Deborah, when we come back, I would really like it if you would spend a little bit of time telling the people about counterfeit caviar and what the things that they have to look out for when they're buying Iranian caviar outside.
And you out there in the audience may never have had caviar before. You may not like caviar. You may never want it again. But the things that are going on in the world of caviar are very interesting from a business perspective, from an ecology perspective, and also from a food perspective. And we'll be talking about that more about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com.
And you can also podcast us on iTunes or Podcast Alley or check us, download some shows from our website. We're here talking with Deborah Keene from Tsar Nicolai Caviar, which to our mind is the preeminent producer of American caviar.
Probably to Deborah's too.
Exactly. American caviar and American fish eggs in general. And you were talking, this is a very interesting thing, everybody, because the traditional places from where the world got its best caviar were Russia and Iran. Many, 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 many years ago, America was a top producer of caviar. But for a long time it hasn't been, and American fish eggs for a long time were really nothing to write home about. That's all changed. And in the market today, because of a lot of reasons, including the fact that because of the dissolution of the Soviet Union and poaching pressures, But traditional caviar production areas are under a lot of pressure. They're not producing the quality they were before, and they're pressured. They're threatened with extinction. That our American caviar has risen in quality and certainly risen in preeminence for domestic production. Has there been a huge increase in quality, Deborah?
Yes, there has, for a number of reasons. And at the same time, twofold, there's been a decrease in quality being imported.
No doubt about
because
that.
Because of the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
But for the improvement, pioneering in domestic farming and for sturgeon is brand new. There are only 6 farms throughout the world. So it's all new. We're all learning. So every year, the techniques are improving. We're using organic feed, sustainable farming, and everything affects the quality of the product. At the same time, we can control the conditions so that we can maintain a consistent product, which consistently makes for a better caviar, of course.
Yeah, in the caviar world, it seems like there was a real power vacuum there for a little while, and Czar Nikolai from California really kind of helped to fill that void over the last couple of years. I really want to talk about the problem with counterfeit caviar. It sounds ridiculous, mm-hmm. but caviar is so expensive over per ounce, great caviar, that there was this big problem with counterfeit caviar. Mm-hmm. Now, where did that come from, Deborah?
There's numerous reasons why demand and supply is the number one reason, and the cost, as you have indicated. Primarily, people are looking for, they want what they want. Mm-hmm. And so when we can't receive it, CITES and the FDA are limiting all the importation of the product. They'll go to Plan B, and they'll mask quite a bit of product under another name. In fact, we actually found some of our product being packaged as an imported.
Oh, repackaged
wow.
to something else?
Yes.
Wow.
So the key is reliable sources. Make sure you know where it's going or where you're buying it from and where it's coming from. Where you see most of the counterfeiting taking place is exportation. You're going to see a lot of paddlefish Mastis of Ruga.
Wow.
On the way out and things
Yikes.
Like that. So you do see, I've heard about dying whitefish roe in lieu of hackleback, which, you know, the pop of whitefish compared to a hackleback should be pretty obvious to people who know caviar.
Now, just so everybody knows what caviar is basically the fish eggs from sturgeon.
Correct.
And there are different grades of caviar, and it's fairly expensive. And, you know, if you do like it, it's really a remarkable treat. And what people have used other sorts of fish eggs, and paddlefish roe, you know, roe is another word for fish eggs. It's not caviar. But paddlefish caviar, you know, loosely use the word caviar, paddlefish roe can be very good, but it's much less expensive. And so there's a whole lot of counterfeiting going on.
Just to give everybody an example, maybe what might be $15 an ounce as paddlefish roe might be $300 an ounce as
Iranian.
Yeah, it's a root, exactly.
Now, would you explain to people how caviar is made and harvested? I think people would be really curious. I mean, we've all have heard of it, but I think a lot of people don't know exactly how we get it.
No, it's interesting, especially with the process. A lot of people don't realize that we still process caviar by hand. Every single pearl you eat will have been rubbed over a mesh, a screen, and dropped into a bowl and then rinsed and packaged by hand. So there's no automation in caviar production.
So tell me what happens. We have our sturgeon swimming around in the lake. Then mm-hmm. what happens?
Well, they're in ponds or the lakes or the runways that they have. The general size of the egg that you're looking for is 3 millimeters plus. To get an egg that size, it's usually a 7-year-old fish. She's about 100 pounds and could be anywhere between 80 and 100 pounds and upwards of 6 feet long. So it's quite a labor of love, and only 10% of that will be roe. So we do have to, we take the fish, we sacrifice the fish. We're unable to C-section the fish and have her reproduce in captivity. In the wild, she can, but they can't. So we use the skins, we use every part, the spinal cords, And all the meat of the
sturgeon. Sturgeon, by the way, is one of my absolute favorite fish. It's a really very meaty, very dense fish, and really one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, to have a beautiful smoked sturgeon is
or grilled even.
Yes, it's not easy to do. I guess grilling is wonderful, but
Deborah,
cooking it is a trick, so you must know your fish very well.
Deborah, you know what you can't do? You can't use the word beautiful and sturgeon in the same sentence.
That's an ugly fish.
You know what? It's a prehistoric animal. It has not improved in the years.
It didn't stick around by being pretty. So
no.
So then we get the eggs, and we hand wash them, and we hand process them, and we put them in tins. And within how long? Now, we salt them a little bit, right?
We lightly salt them. You rinse it. You take the you rinse it from the membrane. You salt it, and you put it in the tins, and you rotate it for at least a couple of weeks. Every day, they have to be we pressurize them. We put blocks on them. They have to be pressured so that all the air gets squeezed out of the tins.
Uh-huh.
You rotate them daily for 2 weeks. And then they should be left to mature and to really come to their full
for how long?
Flavor. Ideally, I love to eat it 2 months after it's been made. Some people prefer to eat it as soon as it came from the fish.
Uh-huh.
It really, anywhere, even I've had caviar that's absolutely wonderful 4 weeks later after processing. It's super fresh and clean. And then I've had it a year later, and it can be full and rich and, you know, kind of like a wine. It'll age with time.
What's the outer limit?
Outer limit really depends on how you store it. I hear of other companies having caviar caves, which I'm not sure about.
Uh-huh.
So I have heard that, you know, I wouldn't want to go down the road of over a year, but I know that it's out there.
Yeah.
So that's just not for me. It's really your preference of how strong you like your caviar.
Here we have a very specialized product, and I think it's very interesting, and it has a lot of status to it. And I think that, you know, that stuff that you buy in the supermarket, the black lumpfish, quote unquote, caviar, the red lumpfish, quote unquote, caviar. I mean, that's just not caviar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason that counterfeit caviar is so popular is because I think a lot of people who do order it want to just say they had it or say they have Iranian caviar,
right?
Because the product's not in the tin.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, American fish eggs had a stigma attached,
yeah,
to it.
Absolutely.
And that's really gone by the wayside because the product is really in the tin. And I think that's where restaurants are sort of leading the way in using American roe.
Well, it's funny because I think now that maybe some of the imported caviars, because of the problem with counterfeiting, because of the problem with sometimes it not being in pristine condition when you get it, now those seem to be getting the stigma, and great American caviars seem to be all the rage.
It is. It's safer. The sources are reliable. It's basically your counterfeiting you're running into is really with your imports.
Right.
And the FDA is really cracking down on it. If you haven't noticed in the papers, you'll read it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a big deal.
It's not as valuable to counterfeit the American caviars because they're not as expensive.
What I would like to talk more with you about, Deborah, is I would like to talk about sustainability. You raised the issue of sustainability, and that's something that's very important to us and to everyone, really, whether you realize it or not. And the other thing that we're going to talk about in just a moment is how to use caviar, how to prepare caviar, how to handle caviar in your home, because it's a little tricky.
And what not to do is really important.
But if you like fish, it's going to be really great. So we're talking with Deborah Keene of Tsar Nikolai Caviar, an American caviar producer, and to our mind, the best one. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450, the time, 45.
Back, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we have our guest, Deborah Keene of Tsar Nikolai Caviar.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
You were talking earlier, Tsar Nikolai is an American producer of caviar, and one of the big draws to caviar, one of the things that brought me to you, well, I'll tell you the thing that did bring me to you, and this is a compliment. We had been aching to serve American fish eggs, American caviar, but as you remember from our first meeting, when we had a very pleasant initial conversation, and then we were both working a fundraiser together, I was being a guest sommelier, and you were serving your caviar. And you were up to your elbows in caviar, and there's nothing more beautiful than a beautiful woman up to her elbows in caviar, Deborah, for a guy like me. But I came up, and we started talking about...
You could have been in a bikini. I think that might have worked better.
Might have helped a little bit, but the caviar was great. Anyway, so we got to talking, and I said, listen, I've tried your product in the past, and it was good, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, listen, this is what you have to order, and this is how it's going to work. And I really, really have been and was impressed. We carry our Nikolai caviar now in the restaurant, so if you at home want to try it, just come down, sit at the bar, order some caviar.
I can also tell you that
it's not cheap.
No, it's not. One of the great changes in American caviar.
Turn the face of change. Sorry.
Thank you.
Song
please
cue.
Don't sing.
I couldn't resist.
Please don't ever sing. One of the great changes that has happened in the caviar business in the United States is the method of shipping.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I remember, and this wasn't your company.
Oh,
so
I remember this.
I have no problem saying it. There was a company that was making a synthetic caviar, and they said, oh, you have to try our product. It's spectacular. Francis and I are like, synthetic caviar, I don't think so.
Okay,
all right.
Ship it, we'll try it.
Well, they shipped it to us in the middle of the summer. And it came as one gelatinous glob of gunk. It was one of the most disgusting foods I've ever seen in my life.
80-degree gob of black, salty, blech.
No ice pack.
No, the ice pack had melted.
Yeah.
It had gotten held up a day, and it held up an extra day. And, you know, I mean, your FedEx guy runs into us in the morning and you know, urgently hands us our very cold, beautiful
caviar. The caviar jello?
An idea that time has not come.
Yeah, whole
something,
new thing.
Something I wish I'd never had. Hey, so listen, you raised the issue of sustainability, and that's very important to us. And a lot of people have heard that a lot of fish farms can be very detrimental to the environment. Talk to us about sustainability and the way that you raise caviar or sturgeon for caviar.
We work and we partner with UC Davis here in California, and everything we do is organic, eco-friendly, sustainable in our practices. So basically our tanks are proprietary tanking techniques that we have developed that we use natural aquifers under the ground that pump 20,000 gallons a minute into and through our tanks that keep the waters pristine.
Right. Now, what happens to the wastewater from your sturgeon?
Comes off. We put it into a holding pond where we filter it. That's generated by a centrifugal force, so we try to use minimal amount of electricity. At the same time, it gets put into a holding pond where we use hydroponic farming to nourish the water, and it gets pumped back into the tanks, and we recycle it. No runoff.
That's really very important to us because fish farms, you know, fish farming is a very good way to take pressure off native species that are endangered, which is exactly the case here.
Unless they do damage to the ecosystem, then you've really done it for naught.
Well, and so many fish farms, can they say that a poorly run fish farm or an average agribusiness fish farm can issue the same amount of pollutants as a city of 7,000 releasing untreated sewage into the water? So when someone does take the time to farm properly, like the Scottish Quality Salmon Alliance,
sure.
or like you all do out there in California with Tsar Nikolai caviar, that's really important. And I think that people more and more, when they come to the restaurant, they want some of the finer things in life, but they also want to make sure that, you know, what we're buying, we're not using the, you know, we often say that, you know, the earth is an engine and the earth is a business. You know, we're all engaged in business. The question is, are we in the business of a closeout sale using up all the products of the earth, or are we, you know, doing it the way we've done it for 6,000 years?
Well, and I completely agree with you. As you know, we partner with a lot of different organizations for this. One of the things that a lot of people aren't aware of is that sturgeon, even though, and you mentioned a very large fish in the pounds, that they can be, you know, 80 to 100 pounds in captivity for us, they have no solid waste. A lot of people don't realize that. So it's very, very different when it comes to standardized, you know, farming with thousands of fish in a tank versus very large fish who obviously we cannot put that many in a tank and not having any solid waste.
Now, let's talk on more about the lighter subjects of life, and which is how do you find your caviar is being used? Do you find that it's going mostly to restaurants and chefs, or do you find that individuals are ordering your caviar for home?
I find it's a pattern. I think you start with the restaurants and chefs because the chefs are always looking for something new, trying to improve, and definitely in California and moving further east, and I know New York is definitely this way now, looking for better alternatives and really paying attention to the planet organic farming and higher quality products.
I find
it starts there, and once they've been introduced and they feel a little bit more comfortable being introduced, very similar to, like you had mentioned, come in, try it, then they feel a lot safer to go out and purchase it on their own. Well, it's one of those things that they're not that familiar with.
And I've also seen you in a bunch of high-end catalogs, like Dean and DeLuca catalog and things like that that people get in their homes.
Correct.
And I think that that makes it a lot more accessible. I think that people are very alarmed about what to do with caviar at home. And when we come back, Mark and I are going to talk to them about some of the things that we recommend that people do. But I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us from across the country about this great project you're doing.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And that was Deborah Keene from Tsar Nikolai Caviar out in California, a sustainable producer of American caviar. And you want to buy American? Buy American caviar. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shaw. We were just talking with Deborah Keene of Tsar Nikolai Caviar out in California, making a really splendid product out there. But one thing we didn't get a chance to talk to Deborah about, Francis, is the serving of caviar and how important serving caviar correctly can be. Now, let's tell our listeners a little bit about mother of pearl and why that's so important.
Well, sturgeon caviar that's really bizarre quality of it is if you use a metal spoon, if you touch it with metal, you really zap a lot of the flavor out of it. It's got this weird balance, this electrical balance that gets thrown off by touching most metals. And so they make mother of pearl spoons, you can use a plastic spoon. And
right.
What we do when we
you
use it in the kitchen.
You can actually use like your plastic spoon that you go have at a picnic.
And so the traditional way is to use the mother-of-pearl spoon. But in the kitchen, when we handle caviar, we use plastic spoons.
Mm-hmm.
But we never, never let it touch metal spoons. And listen, don't be intimidated by caviar at home. You can go to Tsar Nikolai. I think it's tsarnikolai.com, but whatever it is, it'll be up on the web later today. And if you want to order, they have the caviar, which is their Selecto Cetra caviar, which is made from sturgeon. And that's the classic caviar, black fish eggs.
Right.
If you like fish, it's really great. It's great to top off a simple, and I say simple, fish dish because you want to let the caviar speak. You want to let the caviar be out there.
And as an introduction, I think they have some really, really deliciously flavored roe as
well. Yeah, fish eggs.
White fish eggs. They have a black truffle one that's just stunning and relatively inexpensive.
Yeah. Oh,
we're talking about $300 for Iranian savruga. We're talking about $15, $20 for an ounce of the truffle scented caviar.
Of the white fish roe, you're talking about $15, $20. Mm-hmm. Of the Ocetra caviar from Tsar Nikolai, you're talking about $50, $60.
Right. I'm just saying the difference between, people think caviar, you automatically think very, very expensive.
And the reality is, you know what? It's really a great food. Just put it on a cracker. See what you would want to use it with. Just don't touch the black caviar with metal, and you'll be fine.
Right.
And I really, if you want to try something new, go and get it, put it on a cracker, and enjoy it.
And it really, and we've done this side by side, you need to trust us. Don't touch metal to your caviar. It really can make ruin some really expensive caviar.
And we've seen it done in restaurants, and that's really unacceptable when they do that. But it's really great as an ingredient on a fish dish to just top it off at the end. And like I said, like Andy Griffith used to say, everything tastes great when it sits on a ridge.
You don't have to be a snob to eat caviar.
You're right. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450, and the time is 12 noon.